Welcome to the Octave Podcast, where we will present short, digestible segments clipped from the Octave Inference Lab weekly live streams. If you like what you hear and you want to learn more, check out the entire live stream at the Octave Inference Lab YouTube channel. The link to the live stream is provided in the episode description. My name is Blue Knight, and I will be guiding you through this podcast episode, which is clipped from Octave Lab live stream number 8.2. This discussion will be loosely structured around the paper, Scaling Octave Inference, by Alex Shands, Manuel Baltieri, Anil Seth, and Christopher Buckley. Alex Shands, the first author, is going to start us off talking about his motivation for undertaking this study.
I'm very interested in reinforcement learning, machine learning, and also very interested in active inference. The two communities don't really speak to each other as much as they should, and so much of the work that's happening in reinforcement learning, especially model-based reinforcement learning, has direct analogies to the work that's being developed in the active inference community. So stuff like the use of variational methods, variational autoencoders, the use of dynamics models, the use of trajectory-based planning, or just planning in general. And these algorithms have a lot of similarities between the two. The use of intrinsic objectives, these information game terms, is widespread in both, the use of belief-based planning. So all the things that we sort of touched on in the paper. So in my mind, when I started out, the aim was really just to construct an agent using the machinery that would be common and relatable to the machine learning crowd, but that was consistent with the active inference framework. And I guess a secondary goal was also to put together an initial attempt to look at whether what needs to be put in to get some of these ideas to scale. With a particular focus on, you know, this wasn't a biologically plausible suggestion, but looking at some of the objective functions, the expected free energy at scale, I think is of interest, rather than, you know, where it's commonly looked at in these small discrete T-maze style environments.
Daniel Friedman is going to take over facilitating this discussion about what it means to scale active inference.
Cool. Really helpful in a lot of terms that we've heard, but to link together the ideas of the variational inference with the belief and the trajectory-based planning, those are all really cool things. I just have a question about the at-scale part. So one aspect was that you introduced the continuous state space as opposed to the discrete. But is there anything else that's meant by at scale, or what does it mean to scale in this context?
Well, I mean, so I guess the scale just means it's almost defined in relation to what is currently common in the active inference literature, which is where your entire world is often designed by four or five states in those transitions. So this paper presents a framework that can be applied to, you know, observations of 10,000, 100,000, and so your state space or your observation space is much larger. So that's what I meant at by scale, is putting forward a framework that could be applied to higher dimensional tasks than the ones that we currently consider. And there's also a second thing, which is not really captured in the word scale, but also the complexity of the dynamics. So some of these tasks actually have quite a small state space, you know, like four or five, but the complexity of their dynamics requires large models of a number of parameters to learn. So there's kind of a scaling aspect and a scaling in the space of complexity of your dynamics.
Cool. Very interesting stuff. And I also found it interesting. There's the scaling dimensionality. Then there's the introduction of continuous state spaces, not just discrete. And then often as machine learning, people might use the word scaling to mean it's about the number of observations, the size of the data set. And that relates to like the compute scaling relationship. As you add, when you double the data set input, is it the same amount of training time? Is it twice as long? Is it four times as long? Is it 4,000 times as long? And so really interesting, because there's also the scaling in terms of the understanding in the world, and people talk about scaling and innovation and entrepreneurship and how do you scale a solution. So there's a lot of parallel meanings and a fun and concise title, because you know that the finding isn't going to be in the title. There isn't just a simple way that says, oh, this protein does this in this species. We're talking about developments in a modeling framework, but we also want to be specific about what those advances are and how they relate to systems. Stephen first, and then anyone who wants to.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Stephen. I'm based in Toronto. I do a lot of work with participatory theatre and community development, and I'm researching how social topographies can be used across scales.
I'm just curious because I know that the scaling question has been maybe looked at more from a philosophical perspective in the kind of active inference. So what this paper really helped me do, or helped me, was it like broke that fear of questioning the kind of these models, because the like people like yourself and Anil and that are saying, look, there's a challenge here in the scaling. Like this stuff is being kind of used at these low dimensional spaces. And basically it showed like a gap in the literature in terms of how to action that, which kind of helped me because it sort of gave me a bit of permission to say, okay, it's okay, there's a gap there. And it's not that I just don't understand everything. It's just not easy to scale. And I think this paper was the first one to explicitly say that, because all the other papers tended to talk about, yes, we know how to scale, but in a philosophical way. But this is like, okay, well, this is the problem from a practice perspective.
Cool. Just one note on that, if anyone else wants to raise their hand. I really love this idea where there's the gap in the literature, and there's a billion gaps in the literature. It's about which ones are salient and fundable and relevant. So there's many gaps in literature. And then when we find that gap, which is often very niche, like in a PhD, and I thought, wow, this data set has been collected from this ant species, but not this other ant species. There's a gap in the literature. We don't have this data set on this ant species. And then seeing that as a opportunity and something that's okay, even if it's not your traditional field of study, it's okay because you're at the edge, like at the gap with us, talking to the author and talking through the equations, but this is what it looks like to look across the gap and try to connect because somebody else has identified it as a research question, or maybe you have. Alec?
Yeah, and so I just wanted to comment on that as well and entirely agree with what you're saying. To come to maybe the defense of the existing literature on active inference, I think it's viewed a little bit, or this maybe it's just me interpreting what they're saying, but that maybe the problems that they're testing their agents in, for instance, something like the T-maze, are actually viewed as quite complex in a different dimension. So a lot of these reinforcement learning tasks, stuff like Atari, most of Atari, most of, you know, the stuff where you're really pushing to get state-of-the-art results with huge amount of compute and deep mind competing against there, they're often, you can often get by with just this model-free reinforcement learning that doesn't require any notion of beliefs or any notion of proper epistemics. You can get away with undirected exploration. So what I think the active inference community has tried to do is look at simple tasks such as a T-maze that actually, well, you can solve them without beliefs, but are far, far more amenable to being solved with a belief-based scheme and with this directed exploration and uncertainty reduction. To show the kind of complexity that the framework can come up with. But then you could also respond by saying that this is also thought about a lot in reinforcement learning, and there is the question, obviously, of whether the kind of process theories they put forward will apply when you've got when you've really got the scale that reinforcement learning tends to do.
Yeah, let me add on to that because it's a really great point. So a lot of times what's perceived as cutting edge or modern or advanced research in machine learning, I mean, go check the lay media, and it's going to be about this many graphical processors or this size of data set or this accuracy or this level of skill using massive data. And it's very much on the performance end and on the eking out a little bit more performance from increasingly large data sets with increasingly large types of models. But it's actually in some sense a local exploration. It's locally exploring certain frameworks and ways of doing machine learning, which is just computer statistics. And so what this is like with this paper is a return to simplicity, and it's a return to a slightly different way of conceptualizing some of the parameters and how they're related. And the big data, just train it bigger, train it better, is kind of like thinking that we can do X without a belief. We can train on Go just by watching Go, and we can train the laws of physics just by watching physics. We can learn language by just watching regularities in human language. These approaches, there's merit to them. This isn't just about one way being better. It's just that what is being done in this paper is to take the free energy principle and active inference, which previously had made these kinds of philosophically, at the very least, tantalizing claims, like the relevance of a belief-guided trajectory-based optimization and search, taking these very fascinating ideas a little bit out of the sandbox into the next level of the playground, where now we can actually start to compete, or at least compare and contrast directly with the kinds of benchmarking algorithms that are used. So maybe one day, you know, active inference Go or active inference chess, but today we have the simple control theory parameters, which is one level closer to these kinds of use cases that are happening today, one level closer than the T-maze or the three-state decision, is it a mouse or a hawk or a cat, that type of stuff.
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Stay tuned for next time, where we'll be moving on to discuss a new paper